Welcome everybody to a Praxis audio conference training series on safety and accountability audits for grantees of the Office on Violence Against Women who are conducting or considering audits in their communities. So as you all know that this five-part series is specifically for audit coordinators, and my name is Casey McGee. I'll be your host today. Today is part one in the series. We'll hear from Ellen Pence about developing your audit question and scope, and I'll let her start in just a little bit. Let me just say one quick caveat. This September series is geared towards the needs of audit coordinators specifically, or people who are running audit projects. So we won't be covering introductory audit topics on this series, but we will be covering introductory audit topics in the October series. So everybody's welcome to call in on whatever call, but just so that you know what our focus will be. So a couple of housekeeping details. If there seems to be some background noise, I'm going to mute all the lines during the presentation, and then I'll unmute the lines during the Q&A period of the call. You can also mute your own lines if you have background noise in your office. You do that by pressing star 6 on your keypad, and then you press star 6 again on your keypad to unmute yourself. When you're speaking, please remember to say your name and the state you're calling from so we can identify you. And lastly, we do tape these calls, and we make them available for $8 a CD. The order form will be available for download from our website after the series is over. So, Ellen, you can go ahead and start.
For $25, we'll take out something stupid you said.
Exactly.
So that's a good deal. Casey, can you unmute the lines for just a minute and we'll...
They are all unmute right now. People are just muting their own lines.
Okay, so you're all not muted now. So if you've muted yourself, you press star 6 to speak. But I would just like to know, starting out with the California people, anything that you want to say about what you're doing now that just, you know, because it's easier for me to talk if I know a little bit about what you're doing. We'll take about 10 minutes and just get a check-in with people. Any California people want to say something that they're doing or any you want to address about this whole issue of what should we do our audit on and how do we limit our scope and how do we decide our audit questions?
And Ellen, I don't know that folks from California are on the line, but we do have folks from Oregon, so I don't know if you want to expand.
Yeah, I'll go down my list here.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay, California going once, twice. That's it. This is not a three-time kind of deal. Iowa. Okay, Illinois. Kathleen, you're on.
I'm here. Well, the number of participants in the conference is 14. We're just in the process of trying to really limit our scope. We had ideas of grandeur, and then full-time jobs came into play. So now we're just trying to figure out a baby audit.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I think you said it very well. This is Diana, also in Illinois.
Okay.
Thank you, Diana.
And Maine, Judy, are you on or someone else? Michigan?
That's me.
Okay.
I'm Judy Keeler, the CCR coordinator here for the Grand Traverse Band, and looking at maybe doing something in the future, but we're not ready for something right now, I don't think.
Okay. If you were to look at your whole system and say the place that battered women get, you know, what you think is the weakest place for protecting battered women, not an agency, but a process, what would that be?
Right now it's... communication and coordination with the different disciplines that deal with battered women.
Okay, all right. So I'm going to kind of give you a way of translating that into an audit question, okay? Okay. How about Minnesota? Okay. Montana? North Dakota?
Yes, this is Julie Christensen at the Community Violence Intervention Center in Grand Forks.
Hi.
I was listening to you this morning.
Yeah. My God, we're spending the whole day together, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We are working with our supervised visitation center, and we want to find out the referral process through the protection order process. You know, why are women not coming or are coming to the center and looking for safety and accountability?
Okay, that's good. That's interesting. You know, there is a center that did a similar kind of audit in Kent, Washington, which is right outside of Seattle. And if you email Casey, she can hook you up with the person that facilitated that audit, okay?
Okay, that's great.
Okay. Okay. New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Mary Houtsma. I'm from Essex County, New Jersey.
Did you think I was from New Jersey when I said?
Of course, recognize your accent immediately.
Okay, good.
And I've never pronounced New Jersey that way.
Hello.
The county that I am working in, and I'm currently working in a program for children exposed to domestic violence, we have a working group or a task force in the county that is, it's funded to ensure the implementation of our domestic violence statute. And this working group is exploring the idea of implementing a safety audit. So I'm listening in on the audio conference to sort of get a sense of what that process is.
Okay, and so they don't necessarily haven't picked an area to audit?
No.
Okay. Okay, Nevada.
My name is Nina Rue. I work for the AG's office, and I've only worked here about 6 weeks, so I am just learning.
Oh, okay. I know what you're doing because I'm working on that one. Oregon?
Hi, this is Lynn Fairweather from Domestic Violence Enhancement in Portland.
Okay, and then what are you trying to do an audit, or where are you at?
Well, I'm standing in for the coordinator today, so I'm just going to throw my ignorance about the subject out on the table. Okay. So I will be doing a lot of listening today and learning. Javert is a multidisciplinary collaborative that works with domestic violence cases that are at high risk for homicide. Uh-huh. There are a lot of different areas that we could potentially look at, although there isn't anything that is scheduled as of yet.
Okay. And one of the things, obviously, that if your project is to try to zero in on high-risk cases, one of the things, I'm just going to say this now because I'll forget it when I get around to talking about things, is you could do an audit of your system to see how various practitioners are positioned to react differently given the level of risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So some people, they always do the same thing no matter what the case is in front of them. But ideally, you want to set up a system where people are able to adjust their intervention to the level of risk. So you can do an audit to see in what ways have practitioners been positioned by how you've set things up so they can adjust their intervention based on the risk.
Yeah, I think looking at that would yield a lot of interesting information.
Oh, yeah, tons, you know. So, just a little example is with police, sometimes we have these state laws that say police must arrest every time there's probable cause. So that means that somebody throws an empty Coke can at someone, that, you know, aluminum, that they can hardly feel hits them, but that is an assault in Minnesota, unwanted touch. So that if they admitted to that in front of the officer, by law, the officer would have to arrest that person, even if the victim said, excuse me, it didn't hurt, and I don't want them arrested. So oftentimes these arrest laws and policies we wanted to catch batterers, and we've ended up catching their uncles and grandmas and aunts, and, you know, threw out this net that was a little bit bigger than we intended, and in comes a whole bunch of people, and the police don't have the ability to adjust to the level of violence. And so that's just one simple example of sometimes a constraining policy or law that really doesn't get you to zero in your resources on those cases that you're trying to zero them in on. So,
yeah, we do a lot of training on lethality of police officers and social workers, community members, and it would be interesting to look at how that is playing out and what they're doing with that information.
Right. And to you know, like sometimes you can, like in our community, you can get all the training you want. The policy says you have to arrest, no matter how ridiculous the arrest is. So the training might not, you know, if you've got training plus a policy that allows for officers to use some discretion, plus once the person gets arrested, you have a way of taking some of these cases out of the system. You know, you got to have a combination of a lot of things, and that's what an audit does. It looks at all of the aspects of case processing that is influencing an outcome that you're not really wanting.
Okay, anyone else from Oregon?
Yeah, Jen Mining Medford. So we're, our first one this year is doing the Helpline 24/7 call center.
And what are you looking for there?
Mostly we're looking at the way in which it responds to, it does many, many different calls besides domestic violence.
Uh-huh.
We're looking at the way in which domestic violence calls are handled differently
uh-huh.
than other calls and how they link to resources.
Okay. Medford, they audit something new every 6 months, just so you know everybody on the phone. If you ever want to get an audit advice from somebody other than us, just call Medford. Someone that answers the phone in Medford will have been audited.
It's true.
No matter what agency you call. So, Texas. Utah. Virginia. Wisconsin. Milwaukee, you're there.
Hi, this is Rita with the Domestic Violence Intervention Project.
In La Crosse?
In La Crosse,
uh-huh.
yes. And we're thinking, we've just been talking about maybe doing a safety accountability audit on the on our La Crosse sexual assault group.
Uh-huh.
We don't know where we're going to start, what the question is.
uh-huh.
We just okay. thought that, and we're not sure if anyone has done that with sexual assault services.
And this is a advocacy service center, like?
Well, the sexual assault services group really is kind of is part of the CCR, and they're looking at all the agencies that work with sexual assault.
Uh-huh.
They do some awareness things, and they also are looking at the universities and just basically seeing what services are out there and how effective they are.
Okay.
But it's just an idea that Ann Quinlis has had, and we got some money to do it, and we're just not sure where we're going to start.
Okay, great. Okay.
So we know we're going to have a lot of HIPAA issues.
Right.
We've talked a little bit with hospitals here, and they're already going, So
mm-hmm.
We're going to continue to meet on that and see.
Yeah. Well, just in case I don't remember to say this when we get back to your issue, when we've done audits, we've done a few audits on the child protection system, and we end up with a lot of these problems. So sometimes we start out by finding five or six women who have used the child protection system
okay.
and asking them, we want to do this audit, can we use your cases? And if so, we'll pay you $150 to go get your entire case file.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but only if if it's okay with you if we use your case. Because in audits, you don't need huge numbers. You need cases that are typical of how a case goes through the system. So
okay.
we can talk about that later, a way to go back.
And we have had a few women that are meeting that kind of advises the sexual assault group, so I'm sure we can get a few women to help us with that.
Yeah. Okay. And then Wyoming.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I forgot you, Jeff.
Oh, that's okay. This is Jeff Price from the Milwaukee DA's office. We've just had a new district attorney elected, and we're looking now at really getting started on our audit, and we've been going through a number of reforms. I think what we're mainly interested in is a question that would center around how does our domestic violence unit's contact with victims affect offender accountability and victim safety. And we'd like to really look at everything that relates to that, from police officers that communicate with victims at the incident, how to communicate with our office and our unit, as well as everything from a victim witness specialist communication with victims and prosecutors and what they say and how that affects those two areas and even our subpoena system and its effectiveness.
Okay. I'm going to come back to that one and use that as an example.
Can I join in for just a moment?
No, I'm sorry. It's too late.
Oh, I'm new to the...
Okay.
I just jumped in here. I just joined in.
Who is it?
My name is Debbie, and I'm from Texas. I'm from Bastrop, Texas.
Oh, yes. We just went by Texas. Go ahead, Debbie.
Yes, I know. I got in a little bit late here.
Yeah. Okay.
I just wanted to just mention that we're doing an internal audit. It's totally different than what everybody else is doing. So I'm just hoping to pick up a whole bunch of information that might kind of help us with an internal audit, any information that anybody has on how...
An internal audit of the Family Crisis Center?
Of the Family Crisis Center, correct.
The shelter?
We're not going to audit the actual shelter. We're going to audit our crisis intervention services and our AVIP program, our Adult Violence Intervention Program, and see how victim services and how we're providing safety and offender accountability is how it's all working here.
Is that a batterers program? That adult?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and then the other one is like a legal advocacy program?
It is. It is. It's all crisis intervention. It's all from all the way from hotline all the way to a court accompaniment direct.
Okay, good. All right, great. Okay, and the last one is Wyoming.
That's me. I'm Sammy. And I'm working with Eagle's Wings, which is working with our domestic violence program. And I'm just getting started in the audit process, and I've got two programs that I want to figure out the questions I've got, I guess.
Okay. Okay, and they are?
We've got a Tribal Victims Assistance Program, which is helping to just basically provide services and filing victims' compensation claims and things like that. And then the other is to create a family court system.
Okay. Let me start out by saying this. Like, when you're doing something like creating a family court system, or you're running a DA's office, or you're somewhere in the institution and you want to audit the institution,
the number of participants in the conference is 16.
About, you know, are we kind of doing things in a, you know, are we communicating well with each other? Are we processing our cases well with each other? And when you're putting this audit thing in, the intent of the audit is to ask those questions from the position of the person whose case is being managed. And in our cases, we're usually thinking, asking them from the position of victims of battering. And so I'll just give you some examples of how it might, if you get in the shoes of the person who's being battered and you're looking up at the system and saying, why is it that this system isn't quite working for me? That's what victims ask when they look at the question. How is it? Like, here's one that a victim might ask. How is it that this guy can be beating me up for 11 years, and the first time I hit him, I end up getting treated just like him? And so am I a batterer? Is that what they're saying? So then our audit question becomes, how is it that victims of battering who retaliate or fight back get treated the same as the batterer, and is that the safest thing to do, and is that what's happening? So, so you're asking the question kind of from their viewpoint. You're asking the question from the viewpoint of the consumer who somehow the system isn't quite working right for them. And audits help you figure out how it is that you put the system together that just made a disconnect. It didn't quite work. Most of us work in a criminal justice system that is intended to protect victims from ongoing abuse. It's intended to hold abusers accountable. Lots of times it doesn't do that. Yet it doesn't intentionally never do that. It never intentionally tries to make women in a more vulnerable position when they start it. It does it sometimes with such regularity that we think it's intentional, but it's very rare that it's intentional, that any of these really bad outcomes for battered women is the intent of the system as it processes these cases. So you're looking at unintentional consequences to victims of case processing. Sometimes you can look at a system and say, you've just got the numbers that show you. For example, if you've got 25% of people coming through your system, battered women that are getting arrested and convicted and brought through your system, something in your gut tells you this isn't what we tried to start out to do 20 years ago when we started this whole thing to end battering. We didn't really intend to haul in a lot of battered women for kicking him as he walked out of the house. and then convicting them of battering, but somehow we've got into this. And how is it that we've gotten, we've McDonaldized this response so much that we now have a woman who kicks her husband leaving the house after he's beat her up treated basically the same way, and actually has a higher conviction rate of people in that situation than people who've been beating people up for a long time? Those are kind of practical problems. You look up at the system and say, now how did that happen? And just in that kind of everyday language, that's a little bit what you're doing when you're doing an audit question. How the heck did that ever happen? So some of our audit questions are like that. How is it that I'm doing an audit right now in Detroit, and the question that we're looking at is, how is it that if you're African American, you're 7 times more likely to end up in foster care than kinship care? Now, is that just because there aren't any kinship people around to take in black kids? That might be somebody's, you know, thing. Well, you know, black people are poor, and so, you know, they don't really have, their family members don't have the resources to take them in, or families are disrupted, and so they don't have the capacity to take the kids in, so they end up in foster care. That might be just someone's belief, but other people are saying, no, that's not it. It's not that. And so when you've got this inclination, you've got some kind of quantitative data that tells you, you're 7 times more likely if you're African American to end up in foster care than if you're not any other race except Native American. Native Americans are also very likely to end up in foster care. So why is that? And so that's the audit that I'm working on right now, is to figure out how is it that these things are going on with African American families. And you know, people on one side of, not like is it one side or the other, but people speculate as to, well, it's something to do with the disruption of black families, and other people are saying, no, it has to do with racist decision-making in the system. An audit comes in there and tries not to say it's either one of these things, but says there's something to do with the way the case is being processed from point A to point Z. The way each worker is organized to intervene in that case, that's part of what's producing this problem. And so in order to think of an audit question, you have to remember what an audit does. An audit watches cases go through the system from one point to another. It interviews people. It reads case files. It observes people doing their work. And it asks the question, how have these people been organized to act on this case in a way that's producing this bad result? So the reason I want to emphasize this is your audit question shouldn't be something that this kind of an audit couldn't actually produce some insight on. So sometimes people will come up with a good question, but watching what people do, reading case files, interviewing people, and watching the cases go from point A to point B to point C, that method, which is what the audit method is, won't produce an answer to your question. So your questions also have to think, this is a certain method of examination we're doing, and it examines how practitioners are organized to act on cases. Now, most of us in the domestic violence field, many people here who are in the system responding to the pushing of the domestic violence field to do things different in the system. And so there's a lot of people who say, yeah, you're right, this isn't working right, we're part of the reform effort. And so systems people tend to, you know, join in with the critique of the system, saying, yeah, we can fix this, there are things we can do different. But those of us in the DV community that look up at the system, we kind of divide everybody in the system into two groups, those that get it and those that don't. And then we talk about you that way. Like Jeff, we talk about people like you, so he really gets it. Or we'd say, oh, not only does he not get it, but he'll never get it. And so we've always got you all pegged that way, right? You have us pegged too, we know that. So anyways, an audit kind of pushes against that kind of mentality and that kind of thinking that cases have poor outcomes because certain people get it and certain people don't in the system. And it also pushes against the notion if you just train people enough, if everybody got trained, then everything would change for battered women. It's true that people sensitive to the realities of domestic violence, people who are trying to act protectively for victims of domestic violence, and people who are trained to understand domestic violence generally produce better case outcomes. But they don't consistently produce good case outcomes in a system that's not designed to produce good case outcomes. So you really have to look more systemically at where do policies fit in, where do the procedures that the workers are using fit in, what about the resources that people are using. So the audit is looking at 8 things, not just the training of individuals attitudes, but it's looking at the policies you put into place, the procedures you've put into place, the resources you put into place, how you've made them accountable, how you've linked them to other people. So it's looking at how the system has positioned each worker to act on the case, and then you bring your audit question in. So for me, in Michigan, I'm watching with this group of people from the minute a referral comes into that door, how is the worker that takes that referral assigning this case or screening it out? And what I find is before this case even comes through the door is where one of the big problems happens for African-American people, that African-American people are 4 or 5 times more likely to be reported to child protection for similar kinds of events than are white people. So let me give you, so we found that the increased number of African-American kids in foster care is partly because of the reporting process itself. It precedes CPS ever acting on the case. So for example, in predominantly white schools, the reporting of bruises, injuries, complaints by children for sicknesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is far lower than in black schools. The social workers located oftentimes in some of the black schools, so the teachers can make a referral right there at the school to the social worker. There is no such a social worker at the predominantly white schools. The same thing is in predominantly white hospitals. In suburban white communities, the hospitals do no drug testing associated with childbirth. In the county-based hospitals in black neighborhoods, drug testing is done on every case of a child being born. And so if somebody's smoking marijuana, child protection is notified immediately out of a hospital in the black neighborhoods. If somebody's smoking marijuana in the white community, that would never end up at child protection. So the reporting itself is coming in really high. So you see, when you're posing an audit question, what you're going to do is you're going to watch a case come in, you're going to watch a case go through, you're going to see what's the policies and procedures and regulations and training and resources, how are these things impacting what these practitioners do, and it's producing some kind of a problem. So you start out an audit with a notion that there's some kind of a problem. Let me give you a couple problems. This thing about foster care is one. One that we did in Iowa that I really liked was that everyone who works with domestic violence for very long, especially if you start working and you watch how abusers act as parents, act as fathers, and also how abusers use children as part of the abuse, then you start to get kind of smart in this idea that battering of a woman who's a mother is never done without battering her both as a woman and as a mother. So her relationship with her children is always, it would just be really rare for a batterer to be in kind of full-fledged battering mode and not use the children as part of his tactics of control of her. Using the children both to manipulate and control her, also using the children to retaliate against her, harming the children in order to harm her. There's specific methods that abusers use. And so the relationship between women and their children is almost always compromised, undermined, attacked during a battering relationship. So the question that this group of people in Iowa came up with if we know that to be true, that mothers' relationships with their children are really undermined as part of battering, then when each of us intervene, both individually and collectively, how are we positioned and how are we intervening in ways that enhances rather than further diminishes the relationship between the mother and the child? We're probably not doing things in a neutral way. Our interventions probably have a further impact on her relationship with her child. It probably either bolsters it, or it probably either further negates it. So the question that this audit team came up with is, as each one of us intervene, and as we intervene collectively, how are we enhancing that relationship, and how are we further diminishing it? It was an incredibly powerful audit as people looked for the first time at that question. Police officers, judges in order for protection court, judges, prosecutors. A woman who was on the prosecution team said, I never even thought of this as being my responsibility. But once I started to watch what we did and watch the impact of what we did on women and their children, I all of a sudden realized that I was. Every single case I worked on almost had some impact on a woman's relationship with her child, and I never, ever saw that as having anything to do with me. So your audit question is really one that can shed a light on how it is that processing these cases are impacting people's lives in ways that many of us in the system have not necessarily thought of before. I think a lot of us know that people who don't speak English as their first language, either have limited English speaking or don't speak English at all, are, you know, you're much more vulnerable to violence. If you're in a city or in a community or in a town where you don't speak the language, and sometimes your abuser does, that puts him in a much more powerful position than you as you interface with the agencies. So the question is, from if you get inside of her body and from her standpoint, how is the system set up so the fact that I can't speak English doesn't make me further more vulnerable to him? How are they set up to kind of account for the fact that many women in this community don't speak English? So that would be asking the question, you know, from her point of view. My partner is Irish, so this term is something that we always use, but everything in Ireland is bog standard. It's bog standard. And so your bog standard audit question also can be quite simply, how is safety built into this process or not? The very first audit that I did was back in 1994 or 1995 when I was doing my dissertation. I was at the University of Toronto. And I had done all my schoolwork, and I came back to Duluth, and I had to write a dissertation. And so I picked the sentencing procedures, how probation officers are organized to make sentencing recommendations to the court. Did that centralize safety for battered women or not? And if it didn't, how did safety go missing? So my very first thing was, how was safety built into the pre-sentence investigation process? And I think that's one that everybody can do, that kind of an audit on any process in the system. And so I told somebody I'd give you the quick and dirty best audit to do if you want to learn the process, benefit battered women, learn how to work on this thing together as agencies, and improve part of your system, then ask that question of dispatching. Because it's the easiest audit to do, and it's not fair for dispatchers, but they're the only people in the whole system where everything they do is written down or copied on tape. And so it's very easy to do an audit of dispatching because you can get transcripts. You can actually get the tapes of them talking to people. You can get 25 to 50 domestic violence cases, and you can sit down and listen to those tapes and go in and watch how the dispatchers are organized to do their work. You can interview the supervisors and interview the people who put this kind of system together. You can interview the main recipients of their work, the police officers and the prosecutors, and in a kind of a condensed way, you can do a full audit just on 911 just like that. And basically what you'll find is that dispatchers have a generic job. They take a million different kinds of cases coming into them. They start every single conversation out the same. 911, what is the nature of your emergency? And from there, they're very directive in how they take that call from the person, what they glean from it, and what they give over to the responding emergency vehicle, fire, police, or ambulance, and then what they record. That's their function. They record stuff. They glean stuff from someone. They move information on. And sometimes they glean information from other than the caller, like they'll check to see if there's protection orders. They can do a background check. So some 911 centers are set up to do a lot more gleaning for the responding emergency vehicle. And because that's how 911 is set up and because all that information is right there, it's easy to do that bog standard question, is safety built into this process or not? And I would recommend anyone who says, we've heard about these safety audits, we're interested in using them in our CCR, we're not sure how to start, I would encourage you to start right there because it does a couple things. It teaches you how to do it. It takes one important part of your system and instantly gives you ways of changing it. It involves the police in kind of a constructive way so that they would be more open to then having an audit of them done, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So your audit question then, if you're really saying, you know, we're in the business of trying to fix our criminal justice system, our civil system, this is the starting point of that, and it's a way of kind of learning the process, but also learning to work together in this way. The audit is, to me, I think Medford would agree with me because they've done so many of them, I would never go back and do CCR work anymore without actually the audit being the means that I do everything. Because the audit is simply a way of analyzing what's going wrong in the system from the perspective of victims of battering. And then the way you do the analysis produces the picture of why it's going wrong, which then produces a solution. So I'm just encouraging people, if you're muddling around and saying, yeah, we're interested in this and we're doing CCR work, we're trying to reform our criminal justice system, then why not start right with that 911 picture? So for those of you who are doing, you know, you're farther into it or you want to look at things like, let me just go back to some of my notes where people were saying what they wanted to look at. Where did I write those? Oh, here. Yeah. Well, someone's going to do an internal review of like their own program, so they're going to do an internal review of their batterers program. And let me just say how I think you need to go about thinking of your audit question. If you're going to use this bog standard question, is our batterers program set up to, as much as possible, be protective of the victims of the women who the men are battering? And if you want to use gender-neutral terms, you can. But the question is, are you victim safety-oriented in your batterers program? So then that's a simple question, but the scope of that or how you kind of go into that and ask that question then is you say, how do we get the people in our program? So that very first thing of how do people come in, is that set up to be the safest way? Now, I can just tell you from when I first started doing this work many years ago in batterers programs, there were these waiting lists of sometimes months for people to get into a batterers program. It can't possibly be that your program is set up with victim safety in mind if there's a waiting list of 2 or 3 months. Something went wrong right there. So then you've got to look into that. Why do we have these 2 or 3 month waiting lists? And what's the assumption behind these waiting lists? And that's when we got it. I'm talking way back when now. That's where we got into groups for batterers, open-ended groups, lots of groups with not necessarily a mental health kind of approach where you have to take people in and do individual intakes and do a lot of testing and things like that, but getting people immediately into some kind of a group educational style. And that whole way of doing batterers groups way back then came from that very first observation that these long waiting lists were actually putting women in much more danger. That's how we got into that kind of big kind of massive way of putting a lot of men through battered groups without big waiting lists. So that's what you're trying to do in an audit. You're trying to follow a case from here to here to here to see where safety issues come up. And so that safety question is 9 times out of 10 going to be your first kind of audit. When it's not, when you're trying to look at something different, like how is it that battered women are getting treated like batterers, ultimately that becomes a safety issue. But now you're looking at something a little bit more complicated. But you still want to do the same thing, which is you can't ask a question of your system that you're not going to be able to answer because you can't get access to the right stuff. So remember, in an audit, for you to look at something, you need access to the records, you need to be able to interview the people who are processing the cases, you need to be able to watch them do it. So you might want to say to you about your question, do I really have the access to do this audit? So I'm telling you all, oh, go audit 911. Well, what if 911 says, butt out, we're not going to let you see our tapes, we're not going to let you listen to them, we're not going to give you any transcripts, we don't want to be audited, which is could happen very easily any place, then that's not going to be your audit question, is it? So your audit question also has to be tied to where the door is opened, who wants to be audited, who is willing to raise a hand and say, okay, I'll go first, and I'll let you do this with me. So if you can't do 911, if you go back to what I said I did first, I did the pre-sentence investigation first, not because it was the first part of our system, but it was where I had my best relationships in the system. The probation office had been working with the DAIP in Duluth for a long time to make the system better. We had the strongest relationships there. And when we came up with this idea of doing this, we said, well, can we try it out on you? And for some moronic reason, they said yes. And we said, okay, that means we can come in. Can we sit in and watch you do PSIs? Yes. We'll have to ask the clients, but yes. Can we look at your records? Yes. And so we can work that out. So there's a lot of working out, but remember, your audit question has to be asked of a part of the system that's saying, yes, come in, we're going to make this a transparent process. There's going to be a lot of conditions to that, a lot of signing of confidentiality things, like I never took anything out of their office. I sat in their office and read all the files I was going to read. So it wasn't like, oh, yeah, just come in and we'll copy everybody's PSI and give it to you. That's not what happened at all. But a lot of safeguards were put into place. But the thing was, once they realized what it was that I needed to do this, they were willing to figure out a way to make that available to me to do that. And then later, after we did that, we ended up auditing all parts of our system, and then we started using groups. The first audit I did alone. But then after that, we realized it would be much better if there were 3 or 4 or 5 eyes on this material. They'd see more, and they'd read more, and they'd do more. So the audit changed from a thing that a researcher does to a thing that a group does, and kind of a cross-section of people. So that's a really big issue, is where am I going to go that it's going to be an open process that people want to be to look at this? Because if they want to look at it, then they probably want to change something. We've had an awful lot of people do audits and cajoled people into doing the audit, and then that audit report sat on a shelf forever. So you really want to also do audits of things that you think you've got some political will and commitment to actually to do something about. I'm going to stop here and open it up for questions or any comments people have. Or
yeah, the lines are all open. And again, if you're speaking and we can't hear you, you need to press *6 to unmute your line.
Exactly, I can't hear you.
Hello, this is Jeff Gray from Milwaukee.
You know what? It's funny, Jeff. I was just going to say, if no one said anything, I'd say, I'm going to pick on that, Jeff.
Well, I heard they mentioned that you had said that you were going to come back to that. I was wondering if you were going to come back to it because it was a fantastic bad example or a good one or reacted to it anyway.
Okay, go back now and tell me what it's a complicated one, isn't it, a little bit? What is it? You want to look at the way that people are having contact with victims and whether or not, tell me what you're trying to look at exactly.
It's basically how are we communicating with victims and seeing how that affects the cases, victim safety and accountability. It could mean that we would look at in a very large scope or a narrow one. We've had a huge number of reforms over the last month, and among them is even our subpoena process, where we're using it as an opportunity to communicate with victims on how the system works and make them feel more comfortable with it. But we're not sure how effective we are, and after being involved in some of the training and looking at aspects of having roundtable discussions with victims and their reaction, we thought it would be a great opportunity to see how effective we are in just communicating with them about the process itself and if the way we communicate with them is contributing to a better appreciation and inviting them to be part of the process or actually hindering it.
Okay, that's good. So let me say this. If I'm going to do a, if you were to say to me, do you think that's a good thing that we should do this? The first thing I do is you're talking, I imagine, okay, what would that audit look like? You'd have a bunch of focus groups with women, and you'd say, all right, you got brought into this system, and a bunch of people talked to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who talked to you about what, when, what impact did that have on you?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll start to describe, oh, I don't know, somebody called me up one day, and then somebody else called, and they're thinking they're talking to the same people, right?
Right.
And they're frustrated. So you'll hear in those focus groups their frustrations.
Right.
And a lot of times you'll hear misinformation about who they were talking to.
Exactly, yeah.
They thought they were talking to an advocate, and they were really talking to somebody from the city attorney's office who didn't have confidentiality. Or they thought this and it was this, or they didn't really know why this person was calling them because they just told this person. So then, all right, then I know that's going to happen. I'm going to do this focus group, and I'm going to start hearing stories about people calling them and stuff. Then what I want to do is I want to map out who all is talking to them about what.
Right.
Then what I want to do in my audit is I want to map out, well, what are they talking to them about and how are they sharing that information with each other so she's not saying the same thing over and over. But then I want to find out from the women when I'm interviewing them, did any of that help you and how? And, as you know, like, did it help you to have this person call you? Did you get the system or whatever? Now I'm starting to get a picture of her experience of it. And if the experience, if women really don't report much that they understood the system from all that contact, when I'm watching, when I'm doing my audit and I'm watching them do this, I'm watching them contact or talk to her, I'm thinking, right here's an opportunity to teach. It's not happening. Right here's an opportunity. So you see how I'm imagining your audit. And then as I'm imagining, I'm thinking, do I have access to all that? Like, can I sit and watch people talk to victims? Can I get these victim focus groups going? Can I read what happened in these cases and which victims were participating in that? Blah, blah, blah. And so your audit question becomes a good one if you can imagine doing the audit and all of a sudden information coming into you that would help you bolster that system. And if you can imagine that you get to have access to watching it, looking at case files, and interviewing all the partners in doing it. Those are the three data collection methods and the focus groups. So I mean, my senses of your thing, that if you can do enough focus groups early on, the audit question is a good one, but the focus groups will reshape your audit question a bit.
That's great, okay.
I think you'll learn something from those focus groups. I don't know what, but I know one thing that you'll see is the level to which women don't understand the system that they've been through.
Right.
And that's going to make you think, how could we have had so many people talking to her, explaining this, and have her not understand this system still?
Right.
And then as you watch, as you talk to the women and you watch it, you'd probably see why that is. And then the question is, well, does she have to really understand that system to get protected?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a goal that we have to have, or does she need to, if she's got to make some decisions in that system, what does she have to know to make that decision well from her perspective? What does she need to know, and does she know that when it gets time for her to make this decision, does she really know it? I'll give you an example. I watched a lot of people helping women get protection orders. And I spent a whole day in this protection order clinic, and I maybe watched maybe 10 cases, like 15 minutes here and 15 minutes there. and I left there with a really heavy feeling that women were getting protection orders without having thought it through very well. You know, what the potential benefits were against the potential drawbacks. And the system was set up to give a list of what protection orders can do for you, and then are you eligible? And then the workers, after the women got this little, you know, tape and little talk about that, and are you eligible, then the workers were, did you read that? Did you see that? Yeah. Okay, let's proceed. But there was no real discussion with her, is that you've come to this place thinking that this legal proceeding will somehow help you. Can we talk about that? There wasn't any of that kind of dialogue. And so a lot of women were getting protection orders, and I think they were exposing themselves to some potential real dangers because of their vulnerability. You know, risk isn't just about what the batterer can do, but it's what intervention itself can do. So that was just a little example of something that I saw in this audit that your audit would also show you.
Mm.
If, I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does. It was extremely helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? You're supposed to ask questions here for the comfort of the speaker.
Ellen, this is Casey. I know other people can throw in questions too, but I'm wondering if you could say more about how it is that people come to understand what problems are for battered women in their community. If they don't, you know, kind of emphasizing this difference between the problem for an institution versus the problem for women.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes people, they want to do audits because something's really come up really strong in their community. You know, all these women are getting arrested. Women are losing their kids to you know, battered women who are not abusing their kids. They're losing their kids to child protection. They're in foster care because they're being battered. And these will be kind of advocates are articulating these and bringing it to a CCR or complaining about it to the system or whatever. Other people are in the middle of a CCR reform system, and they have some of the stuff Jeff is saying is that we get a lot of people talking to victims. We need to see if that's working right for them. So it's kind of they're suspecting that that could be enhanced and improved, but they're not sure how and why. But they know it's something worth looking into and doing an in-depth kind of checking into. Other people, some study came out or some statistics come out that show a problem. This whole thing of racial disparity in the system comes out, and it just shows a humongous problem. And everyone's fighting about their interpretation of how this happened. And so they want to find out. The audit is very good at not telling you statistically how much something happens in your system, but once you say this is happening, the audit can tell you how it comes about. What is it in the way that you've structured your case management processes and you've got your workers acting on cases producing this negative outcome when it's not what you've intended by the way you've set it up? So remember that if that's what an audit does, it tells you how something comes about. Your question should be asking, well, how does this come about? How does that come about? So you should already know that there's some kind of a problem in your system that you're looking into. And those are the primary ways is I could go to any police department and say, what do you think is the biggest problem with domestics in the system? Of course, they're going to say it's the prosecutors. Prosecutors, we give them good cases, real good cases, and they're just plea bargaining these things down to nothing. So one of the things you're going to find in the system is people in the system saying that other people in the system is the problem. The judges, the bench is just all over the map. They're totally inconsistent, and their inconsistency creates big problems. Prosecutors might say, you know, the biggest problem in our system is that we've got cases. We're supposed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that, this person committed this crime, and I can't even prove beyond a reasonable doubt that anyone was home that night with the investigations I'm getting. So the prosecutors are going to say the investigations are just limp. They're just not workable. And the police are going to say, we put together this great thing. So one of the things you're going to be able to do is there's a lot of finger pointing that goes on within the system, and all of it every time somebody says, you know, the prosecutors are doing this and the cops are doing that, there's an element usually of truth to that. Prosecutors don't usually sit around and complain about bad police investigations in a place where there's really strong police investigations. Cops don't sit around and universally complain about prosecutors not taking cases forward when prosecutors are taking cases forward. So usually if you get that kind of internal complaining, there's an element that you want to look into there. So I think those are good things to look into. I think the problem with it is the politics of an audit are really, really touchy. You don't want to go after, if there's conflict between two agencies, you don't want to go after an agency in an audit. You don't want to set it up so the cops are complaining about what the prosecutors are doing, and so let's audit the prosecutors and not audit at the same time the quality of the police reports that are being put forward. You want to build, you want to interconnect these things so that you don't end up with a finger-pointing kind of thing. You show the interrelationship of each other in processing the case and their dependencies on each other in making the case work. And so you got to think politically about what you're going to investigate that builds relationships, doesn't tear them down. Or every once in a while we get involved in these audits, and we didn't realize it until we got halfway into it that it was kind of a setup, that everyone couldn't stand this prosecutor, everyone couldn't stand this sheriff. And so the whole deal was, let's do an audit of that system to prove that they're screwed up. And as soon as you do stuff like that, it turns into a nightmare. So I think audits are poor tools to use to go after someone. I think they're tools to use when a system is already in cooperation mode and it has weaknesses that it wants to fix. I don't know, Casey, if that answers your question, but I would say the three biggest sources, advocates. Of course, advocates get their sources from victims, so victims and advocates is one group. Another group is practitioners themselves, and another group is your data and your studies that show that you're all of a sudden you have a spike in numbers of women arrested and convicted, or you show a big disparity in how many people are going off to jail, like more Native Americans are going to jail than anyone else, or none of the cases of Native American women are getting prosecuted. One of the reservations that we were working with, it was an unbelievable number of rapes that were reported, and there was not one prosecution that went to trial. Every single case got dropped between the arrest of the person to the case closure. So that was a really good example of why is it just a universal prosecution of these cases. And it's a reservation that has a really, really high alcoholism rate, and there was an automatic drop policy if the victim had been drinking. And so it was just open season against any woman on the reservation who had been drinking could be raped, and there would be no prosecution of her. So that thing came down to a fairly simple kind of problem, which was a stand that in this case the federal prosecutor had taken on the reservation, and it just had to be kind of politically confronted. So it wasn't much of an audit because they found out the problem in 7 minutes. But that was what the audit question started out being. It was very quick. It was within the first week of the whole process that issue just came booming out. And then, but in order for the prosecutor to change that position and to say, okay, I will take these forward, even with a victim who had been drinking, they needed a much stronger police investigation that needed to then really bolster everything else, because it was kind of like the same concept of evidence-based prosecution now. You're prosecuting without a credible victim, therefore you've got to have a lot more stuff going for you. So while the issue became easy to find, the solution got more complicated. Any other questions people have? Or Okay.
Now,
so
I have one more question, Alan. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Folks are being so quiet today, but I'm wondering too if you could just say something about what manageable looks like, because you know we do hear sometimes from folks who, like you said, when you're writing a grant, your mind is very expansive, and so folks want to do 911 all the way through probation and batters groups. And so talk a little bit about what the manageable idea, how you carve things
okay.
out.
Let me say that this is a setup question that Casey's doing, because Casey and I work together, and I'm always proposing unmanageable things. So Casey wants to get this on tape. So next time I come up with something unmanageable, she said, but you said. So I will take Casey's position on this, which is small and good is better than big and clumsy, you know. So when you do, especially when you're first starting, like Medford's done enough audits, so they could take on, they would have the, know the nuances enough of the process to be able to do a fairly big audit and know when to go into depth and when they don't have to. But when you're first learning this, you want to go into as much depth as possible in your audit. So you want it, I think, to be small. Like, for example, where the Family Crisis Center is going to audit, I think they're going to audit two things, their batterers program and also their services, their services outside of the shelter, like legal services and crisis services to victims. That's kind of big. What you've taken on is really, really big. So you might want to take on some aspect of it. And when you're doing your, again, to do your audit question, you have to envision your audit. So let's take this one of the family violence, the Family Crisis Center in Texas, Debbie, your thing. You've got a batterers program, and you want to know, is that batterers program set up to do things safely for women? And the first question is, this is how I got off on this whole other thing once. I was doing this once before, and I realized that. You ask the question, how are men getting into the batterers program? Who's getting in and who isn't? So the first thing you can just look at is, if the batterers program is making women safer, if we assume that, then are there some women whose batterers aren't getting into that batterers program? And then that's the first weakness of it, the point of entry. Maybe the weakness is, most batterers programs get men in through the court system. So why are they getting in Duluth, for example? I'm trying to think. I think we do actually get a fairly good cross-section of the community into the batterers group. So it's a bad example. But there was a period of time where we had very few Native American men coming into our groups. And we started to kind of look into that and try to figure out what was happening in terms of people coming in. Now, if your batterers group is not representative of the battered women in your community, who's getting battered should be reflected then in who's in those batterers groups. And if that's not the case, then that's your first safety issue. So can you set up your audit in a way that looks at that? And then you go to the next thing and you say, well, do you really want to take on the design of their curriculum? When you think about, you're trying to think, are they set up in a safe way? Are you going to look at the design of their curriculum? Are you going to watch their groups? Are you going to have the expertise to be able to say that wasn't a safe thing to do? You're going to have to be kind of sophisticated in understanding what makes for safety and doesn't in batterers groups. So, for example, I could say, if I was coming into your community, I'd say to your batters group, tell me everything that you do to make women safe in your, what are all the assumptions about what you're doing that's making women safer? And they'll say things like, well, we don't have women in our groups, we just have men in our groups. If men don't come two times in a row, we check on the woman. We've got all these safety measures put in. So then you can do an audit just to do focus groups with women and say, were these things done in your case and did they make you safer? What things about him being in that batterers group made you safer or less safe? And then if they say he would come home mad all the time, he would just come home furious and he would take it out on me and it was always a big hassle. Is the program designed to account for that in any way? You're asking the woman, well, what could they have done? And she's saying, well, you know, he would come home and say, they said this to me and they said that to me. Then you go sit in those groups and you see a very confrontational group in which the men are getting called out on every single little thing they say and do. That might be an indicator to you that this is they're sending these guys home very agitated and she's paying the price for it. So do you have the capability of auditing a batterer's program for safety on battered women? First start out by saying, what are you thinking you're going to be looking at? What would it be like for you to sit in those batterer's groups? What would you look at if you did? What would you know or not know? Who might you have to bring in to help you with the expertise to do this? So that's a little bit about your audit is a complicated audit if you try to take on both of those things. You could take on one of them, but just a batterer's group alone is going to have a whole bunch of elements to the audit. Watching the groups, interviewing the victims, interviewing the men, interviewing maybe experts in the field about these groups, looking at what happens when the men stop coming to the groups, looking to see how they followed up, looking to see their connection to the court. You're getting into like 7, 8, 9, 10 things you're looking at. And I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying if you take that on and at the same time you take on the victim services, you're taking on a lot. You're taking on two very big audits. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, that was very, very enlightening and helpful, Ellen. I really appreciate all of that. No, really, I do. And we're trying to really see how we can tie those in just maybe through the records or somehow and tie in. But you gave me a lot of really good insight here.
Yeah.
So, and some things to think about. So I'm going to be talking to my team about all these things, and I'm giving them that. Thanks.
If you're not totally familiar with everything an audit does, Casey can send you. We have this video that is kind of a description of the audit, and it's interviews with people who have done audits. And
oh,
I don't know, Casey,
right.
Did you charge for that, or did you send it out for free?
I think we're sending it out for free right now.
Okay, so Casey can send it to her if you just want to email her and tell her what address to send it to. She'll send you one of these. Then you watch that video, and then you lay in bed at night, you know, after you've said goodnight to your partner, and you say, imagine your audit. You know, I want to audit this batterer's program. Imagine focus groups, interviews, reading case files, watching the men's groups, talking to experts in the field, da-da-da-da-da. Do I have the resources to do all that? Mm-hmm. If I don't, then, okay, how can I narrow that down?
Yeah, I don't
think. Should I narrow it down to who's getting into those groups? Should I narrow it down just to what happens in the groups and that's all? You know, so you might want to then say, I'm not going to maybe look at the whole batterer's program. I'm going to look at one aspect of it.
Yeah, we may have to do that. I don't think that our grant writer and programmers thought about all of that when they decided to write this into our grant.
Grant writers think about sex appeal in a grant. You know, what looks like, oh, my God, they're going to do
it
that.
It looks good, yeah.
Yeah, that looks good, you know. And everyone knows that, you know, cute people can't dance.
Well, I think I'm going to go in there right now and smack her hand. And Casey and I have been trying to chat, so we'll get in touch, Casey. Thanks a lot.
So there's time for if anyone else has a last question. Otherwise, we're running out of time here. Anybody have anything else they want to ask or say? Or okay, so you're going to lay in bed tonight and fantasize your audit, and then from that go backwards to, whoops, the question was too big. Mm-hmm. And then also I just want to keep reminding you that the audit – put yourself in the position of people whose lives you're trying to improve and ask the audit question as much as possible from their vantage point. How is it that I'm an African-American woman, and if my kids get taken, they're much more likely to end up in foster care?
Rhonda?
Yes?
Casey?
Sorry, hello?
Casey, this is Nina in Nevada. Are you still there?
Yes, yeah.
When is the next safety and accountability training in Duluth or somewhere else going to be held?
We're planning another institute in the spring.
Spring.
Yeah.
No date set yet?
No date set yet.
Okay.
We should do it in April, huh, Casey?
Yeah, March, April, or May are usually the months that we pick. Uh-huh.
All right. Thank you.
We always have that one snowstorm in Minnesota in March, so
yeah.
We should try to avoid that one. So.
That would be nice.
Well, okay, everybody. I think I'm hoping that this was a little bit helpful to you.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's made you, if you were really sure of what you wanted to do, it's made you less sure. It probably hasn't made you more sure, but I always say the first step to change is not knowing what you're doing.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. I wanted to remind everybody to fax in or email your evaluation forms because it really helps us improve our trainings. And then also to join us same time next Tuesday when we'll discuss how to prepare your community for an audit. So thank you, everybody. And thanks,
Alan. Get that video. If you don't have that video and you kind of need it to get a better picture of this audit process, get that from Casey.
Let me know.
Okay, bye-bye, everyone.
Okay,
bye, Casey.
Bye.